Welcome back to Midday. I'm senior producer Rob Sivak in for Tom Hall today. Regular listeners know that every couple of Mondays we check in with the Baltimore newsroom of the Afro newspaper. And here to talk about some of the stories the Afro is reporting this week is the managing editor, Kamau High. Hi, Kamau. How are you?
Hi, Rob. How are you?
Good to see you again.
Yes, good to see you. I think you're doing a great job in Tom's place.
Thank you. It's fun. I love this.
Yes, it suits you well.
Thank you.
Tom better watch himself.
So let's talk about some of the. There was a very interesting story by E.R. Shipp, actually a series of reports that she did about the black press and the Baltimore riots of '68. Speaking about Dr. King and the aftermath of his assassination, there was a lot of stuff going on. But in Baltimore, it was an unusual situation.
Yes. Well, E.R. Shipp is currently a professor of journalism at Morgan State University, formerly at Columbia University up in New York, and former New York Times writer. She's also a Pulitzer Prize winner.
Yes.
As I never tire of telling people, because I'm like, I know a Pulitzer Prize winner. I'm going to drop Pulitzer more than they do.
Yeah. Shipp is a friend of the show.
She's fantastic. So she wrote about the black press and some of the non-black press were how they covered the riot of 1968. And it's a fascinating story, because even in the Afro, in the initial stages of the riots, there was a little bit of classism going on.
Yeah, she was kind of wagging her finger
at
the Afro. Yeah,
we're not afraid of criticism. I mean, plus I wasn't the editor back then, so it's not my fault.
Yeah.
But yes, because in 1968, right after the riot began, I believe we refer to some of the rioters as ghetto dwellers.
Ghetto dwellers.
Yes, mm-hmm. Which is obviously not something that we would say in this day and age. But then she also points out that as the scope of the riots became clearer, the Afro sort of picked itself back up and sort of went all in on our coverage of what was going on, how African Americans were doing, how non-African Americans were doing, and she really gives a nice rundown of not only how the Afro covered it, but also how the Sun and then some of the African American papers around the country wrote about what was going on in Baltimore. Because as we all know, at the time they were after the assassination of Dr. King, riots broke out in all sorts of places in America.
Mm-hmm. In the case of the Afro did an editorial where they reminded people that it was the black community that was suffering the most from this disruption.
Yes. Well, I mean, that's one of the things that you often see when, you saw it in the aftermath of Freddie Gray. You saw it in 1968, not only here in Baltimore, but also in Watts. But a lot, many times the riots break out in the neighborhoods that can least stand to have their businesses destroyed and their homes destroyed. But it is generally sort of accepted as a sort of a cry of rage. Mm-hmm. Like if people refuse to listen to people, the disenfranchised, they will force their agenda onto the table.
Yeah. One of the themes today in the show today has been the power of history. And there was another very interesting story in the Afro looking back at some of the people who formed this famous goon squad.
Yes.
Talk about that. Why did they call it the goon squad?
Well, it was ironic.
Yeah.
Because they were all professional, essentially the black elite of 1968. People such as Perrin Mitchell came out of it.
Lawmakers, educators.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Judges. And what they did is that as a goon squad, they did things like they started what is now currently the Maryland Food Bank. And then they also did several other things that exist today. And they were essentially, and then many of them went on to be politicians, judges, and then top members of the community. And yes, I always thought it was funny that they referred to themselves as the Goon Squad, because they were, obviously just very nice and non-goony.
Yeah. Are any of them still with us?
Yes. Yes, there are several who are still alive. I mean, you're talking people who would have been adults in 1968. So mm-hmm. many of them are deceased, such as Perrin Mitchell. But several of them still are with us. And it would seem like this would be the time to sort of take these issues seriously and step up and do something about them.
Yeah.
But like many things in Baltimore, we shall see.
Yeah. We noted before the break that 76 people have been killed in predominantly gun violence
yes,
over
and
the
five this weekend.
Yeah. It was a very, very bad weekend in Baltimore.
Yes, we'll have more reporting on that in this week's AFRO. We're hoping to flesh out some of the stories of those who are no longer with us.
But apropos of that, I think Michelle Richardson's piece in the AFRO about the relatives of indicted gang members being targeted for violence. Tell me a little bit about that story. I mean, that's really, it's chilling.
Yes, well, I mean... Listen, I mean, you know, when you're dealing with stories about gangsters, there are essentially no rules. And these relatives of these alleged gang members are sort of finding themselves the target of violence and threats of violence. And, you know, from their perspective, they were not in the gang. They didn't do anything. They are merely related to this person who is alleged to have who been involved in a criminal enterprise. But because gangs, as a general rule, don't follow the rules, all bets are off in their attempts to and their alleged attempts to sort of obtain silence from witnesses.
Yeah, we have a little over a minute left. I wanted to just touch on the story about the new head of the Legislative Black Caucus.
Yes, Daryl Barnes, who is a Prince George's legislator from District 25. He takes over for Delegate Cheryl Glenn, and we had an exclusive interview with him in our Prince George's section where he talked about his vision, which essentially boils down to trying to advance the interests of African Americans throughout the entire state of Maryland, not just in Prince George's County. And also he has a plan. He wants to put together a plan for African Americans for 2030. So essentially sort of African Americans were doing. And she really gives a nice rundown of not only how the Afro covered it, but also how the Sun and then some of the African American papers around the country wrote about what was going on in Baltimore. Because as we all know, at the time, they were after the assassination of Dr. King, riots broke out in all sorts of places in America.
Mm-hmm. In the case of the Afro did an editorial where they reminded people that it was the Black community that was suffering the most from this disruption.
Yes. Well, I mean, that's one of the things that you often see when, you know, you saw it in the aftermath of Freddie Gray. You saw it in 1968, not only here in Baltimore, but also in Watts. But a lot, you know, many times the riots break out in the neighborhoods that can least stand to have their businesses destroyed and their homes destroyed. But it, you know, is, you know, generally sort of accepted as a sort of a cry of rage, you know, mm-hmm. like if people refuse to listen to people, the disenfranchised, they will force their agenda onto the table.
Yeah. One of the themes today in the show today has been the power of history. And there was another very interesting story in the Afro, looking back at the, some of the people who formed this famous Goon Squad.
Yes.
Talk about that. Why did they call it the Goon Squad?
Well, it was ironic because they were all professional, essentially the Black elite of 1968. People such as Perrin Mitchell came out of it.
Lawmakers, educators.
Exactly. Yeah. Judges. And what they did is that as a Goon Squad, they did things like they started what is now currently the Maryland Food Bank. And then they also did several other things that exist today. And they were essentially, and then they many of them went on to be politicians, judges, and then top members of the community. And yes, I always thought it was funny that they referred to themselves as the Goon Squad because they were, you know, obviously just very nice and non-goony.
Yeah. Are any of them still with us?
Yes. Yes. There are several who are still alive. I mean, you know, you're talking people who would have been adults in 1968. So many of them are deceased, such as Perrin Mitchell. But several of them still are with us. And it would seem like this would be the time to sort of take these issues seriously and step up and do something about them.
Yeah.
But like many things in Baltimore, we shall see.
Yeah. We noted before the break that 76 people have been killed in predominantly gun violence.
Yes,
over the
five this weekend.
Yeah. It was a very, very bad weekend in Baltimore.
Yes, we'll have more reporting on that in this week's AFRO. We're hoping to flesh out some of the stories of those who are no longer with us.
But apropos of that, I think Michelle Richardson's piece in the AFRO about the relatives of indicted gang members being targeted for violence. Tell me a little bit about that story. I mean, that's really, it's chilling.
Yes, well, I mean... Listen, I mean, you know, when you're dealing with stories about gangsters, there are essentially no rules. And these relatives of these alleged gang members are sort of finding themselves the target of violence and threats of violence. And, you know, from their perspective, they were not in the gang. They didn't do anything. They are merely related to this person who is alleged to have been involved in a criminal enterprise. But because gangs, as a general rule, don't follow the rules, all bets are off in their attempts to and their alleged attempts to sort of obtain silence from witnesses.
Yeah, we have a little over a minute left. I wanted to just touch on the story about the new head of the legislative Black Caucus.
Yes, Darryl Barnes, who is a Prince George's legislator from District 25. He takes over for Delegate Cheryl Glenn. And we had an exclusive interview with him in our Prince George's section, where he talked about his vision, which essentially boils down to trying to advance the interests of African Americans throughout the entire state of Maryland, not just in Prince George's County. And also, he has a plan. He wants to put together a plan for African Americans for 2030. So essentially, sort of like, how can we as a people sort of be better by the year 2030? It's very ambitious, and we wish him well with that. But as you know, we'll sort of see what happens. I mean, 2030 is a long time away, and a lot of things will be coming up between now and then.
Yeah, just a mention of the fact that one of the outcomes of the legislative the assembly that just concluded last week. Is that there are new opportunities for minority licenses for medical marijuana.
Yes, they have increased it from 15 to 20. And while they cannot specifically say that they are only for African Americans, so if, say, a Hispanic American were to gather the resources, they would be eligible for this as well, or an Asian American. But this was a long-fought fight that Delegate Glenn led. And while she did not succeed last year in expanding the number of opportunities, she did succeed this year, something that we were watching very closely, not only at the Afro, but, you know, throughout Baltimore.
Yeah, yeah.
So we say good luck to her.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, also, one more thing. Last week when I was on, I misspoke and I referred to Ivan Bates, who is running for Baltimore State's attorney, as Ian, and I apologize.
Okay. Well, note that correction. Kamau Hai, thanks for stopping by, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you very much.
Kamau Hai is the managing editor of the Afro-American newspaper. That's going to be it for us today. I'd like to thank the Diz for supplying lunch today for Midday's guests. The Diz is located at 300 West 30th Street in the heart of Remington and features signature burgers, wings, steaks, and jumbo lump crab cakes. The Diz is open for lunch and dinner with breakfast served weekends on the web at thedizbaltimore.com. Thanks, as always, to studio engineer Luke Spicknall and my co-producers Sienna Greaves and Kathleen Cahill. Here and Now is up next, right after the NPR newscast at the top of the hour. Tom Hall returns to the host chair tomorrow. I'm Midday senior producer Rob Sivek. Thanks for joining me. Have a great day. Welcome back to Midday. I'm senior producer Rob Sivek in for Tom Hall today. Regular listeners know that every couple of Mondays we check in with the Baltimore newsroom of the Afro newspaper. And here to talk about some of the stories the Afro is reporting this week is the managing editor, Kamau Hai. Hi, Kamau. How are you?
Hi, Rob. How are you?
Good to see you again.
Yes, good to see you. I think you're doing a great job in Tom's place.
Thank you. It's fun. I love this.
Yes.
I love this.
Yes, it suits you well.
Thank you.
Tom better watch himself.
So let's talk about some of the. There was a very interesting story by E.R. Shipp, actually a series of reports that she did about the black press and the Baltimore riots of '68. Speaking about Dr. King and the aftermath of his assassination. There was a lot of stuff going on, but in Baltimore, it was an unusual situation.
Yes. Well, E.R. Shipp is currently a professor of journalism at Morgan State University, formerly at Columbia University up in New York, and former New York Times writer. She's also a Pulitzer Prize winner.
Yes.
As I never tire of telling people, because I'm like, I know a Pulitzer Prize winner. I'm going to drop Pulitzer more than they do.
Yeah. Shipp is a friend of the show.
She's fantastic. And yeah, so she wrote about the black press and some of the non-black press were how they covered the riot of 1968. And it's a fascinating story because even in the Afro, the initial stages of the riots, there was a little bit of classism going
yeah,
on.
Yeah, she was kind of wagging her finger
she
at
was.
The Afro. Yeah,
we're not afraid of criticism. I mean, plus I wasn't the editor back then, so it's not my fault. Yeah. But yes, because in 1968, the right after the riot began, I believe we refer to some of the rioters as ghetto dwellers.
Ghetto dwellers, yeah.
Yes, mm-hmm. Which is obviously not something that we would say in this day and age. But then she also points out that as sort of the scope of the riots became clearer, the Afro sort of picked up, picked itself back up and sort of went all in on our coverage of what was going on, how African Americans were doing, how non-African Americans were doing. And she really gives a nice rundown of not only how the Afro covered it, but also how the Sun and then some of the African American papers around the country wrote about what was going on in Baltimore. Because as we all know, at the time, they were after the assassination of Dr. King, riots broke out in all sorts of places in America.
Mm-hmm. In the case of the Afro did an editorial where they reminded people that it was the black community that was suffering the most from this disruption.
Yes. Well, I mean, that's one of the things that you often see when, you saw it in the aftermath of Freddie Gray. You saw it in 1968, not only here in Baltimore, but also in Watts. But a lot, many times the riots break out in the neighborhoods that can least stand to have their businesses destroyed and their homes destroyed. But it is generally sort of accepted as a sort of a cry of rage. Mm-hmm. Like if people refuse to listen to people, the disenfranchised, they will force their agenda onto the table.
Yeah. One of the themes today in the show today has been the power of history. And there was another very interesting story in the Afro, looking back at the some of the people who formed this famous goon squad.
Yes.
Talk about that. Why did they call it the goon squad?
Well, it was ironic.
Yeah.
Because they were all professional, essentially the black elite of 1968. People such as Perrin Mitchell came out of it.
Lawmakers, educators.
Exactly. Yeah. Judges. And what they did is that as a goon squad, they did things like they started what is now currently the Maryland Food Bank. And then they also did several other things that exist today. And they were essentially, and then many of them went on to be politicians, judges, and then top members of the community. And yes, I always thought it was funny that they referred to themselves as the Goon Squad because they were, obviously just very nice and non-goony.
Yeah. Are any of them still with us?
Yes. Yes, there are several who are still alive. I mean, you're talking people who would have been adults in 1968. So many of them are deceased, such as Perrin Mitchell. But several of them still are with us. And we talked to as many of them as possible to sort of give us
Oliver,
a portrait.
Oliver Scott was one of them.
Mm-hmm. And we talked to as many of them as possible who could sort of give us a sense of what it was like back in those days, because we talked to them not only about the 1968 riot, but also sort of the aftermath of that and then what they sort of did as sort of the black elite of their time.
Yeah, interesting. A couple of other stories that kind of tie in with this whole issue of police misconduct and the story that Sean Yost reported on the allegations continuing to dog the Baltimore Police Department, in particular over the case of Keith Davis.
Yes.
Can you give us a quick sketch of that?
Well, Mr. Davis was shot by the police. Arrested by the police for a murder. And essentially what has come out is that there were some very troubling aspects of his case. And the sort of the news peg or the current thing that is happening is that the Baltimore Civilian Review Board, the Baltimore Police Civilian Review Board, has issued a finding that more investigation needs to be done. Mm-hmm. Now, what's interesting about that to us is that the Civilian Review Board has no power. That's essentially like me saying, hey, please look into this issue more. The police are under no obligation to do anything about it. I mean, it would be nice if they did, but this is one of the many complaints that people had about the establishment of this board in its initial stages, is that mm-hmm. without the power to arrest, subpoena power, or other investigative powers, they were essentially toothless.
Yeah. So, but they are suggesting that
yes.
there were irregularities in the police conduct.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I would take that very seriously. But whether or not the police do is
right.
up to them.
Yeah. Well, that's where the consent decree might provide some additional pressure.
But, yes, it may. I mean, you know, with Baltimore's sort of agreement with the Department of Justice to, after their scathing report on 20 years of police interaction with the African-American community here in Baltimore, it would seem like this would be the time to sort of take these issues seriously and step up and do something about them.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Like many things in Baltimore, we shall see.
Yeah. We noted before the break that 76 people have been killed in predominantly gun violence.
Yes,
over the
five this weekend.
Yeah. It was a very, very bad weekend in Baltimore.
Yes, we'll have more reporting on that in this week's AFRO. We're hoping to flesh out some of the stories of those who are no longer with us.
But apropos of that, I think Michelle Richardson's piece in the AFRO about the relatives of indicted gang members being targeted for violence. Tell me a little bit about that story. I mean, that's really, it's chilling.
Yes, well, I mean... Listen, I mean, you know, when you're dealing with stories about gangsters, there are essentially no rules. And these relatives of these alleged gang members are sort of finding themselves the target of violence and threats of violence. And, you know, from their perspective, they were not in the gang. They didn't do anything. They are merely related to this person who is alleged to have been involved in a criminal enterprise. But because gangs, as a general rule, don't follow the rules, all bets are off in their attempts to and their alleged attempts to sort of obtain silence from witnesses.
Yeah, we have a little over a minute left. I wanted to just touch on the story about the new head of the Legislative Black Caucus.
Yes, Daryl Barnes, who is a Prince George's legislator from District 25. He takes over for Delegate Cheryl Glenn, and we had an exclusive interview with him in our Prince George's section where he talked about his vision, which essentially boils down to trying to advance the interests of African Americans throughout the entire state of Maryland, not just in Prince George's County. And also he has a plan. He wants to put together a plan for African Americans for 2030. So essentially sort of like, how can we as a people sort of be better by the year 2030? It's very ambitious, and we wish him well with that. But as you know, we'll sort of see what happens. I mean, 2030 is a long time away, and a lot of things will be coming up between now and then.
Yeah. Just a mention of the fact that one of the outcomes of the legislative, the assembly that just concluded last week, is that there are new opportunities for minority licenses for medical marijuana.
Yes, they have increased it from 15 to 20. And while they cannot specifically say that they are only for African Americans, so if, say, a Hispanic American were to gather the resources, they would be eligible for this as well, or an Asian American. But this was a long-fought fight that Delegate Glenn led. And while she did not succeed last year in expanding the number of opportunities, she did succeed this year, something that we were watching very closely, not only at the AFRO, but, you know, throughout Baltimore.
Yeah, yeah.
So we say good luck to her.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, also, one more thing. Last week when I was on, I misspoke and I referred to Ivan Bates, who is running for Baltimore State's attorney, as Ian, and I apologize.
Okay. We'll note that correction. Kamau Hai, thanks for stopping by, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you very much.
Kamau Hai is the managing editor of the Afro-American newspaper. That's going to be it for us today. I'd like to thank the Diz for supplying lunch today for Midday's guests. The Diz is located at 300 West 30th Street in the heart of Remington and features signature burgers, wings, steaks, and jumbo lump crab cakes. The Diz is open for lunch and dinner with breakfast served weekends on the web at thedizbaltimore.com. Thanks, as always, to studio engineer Luke Spicknall and my co-producers Sienna Greaves and Kathleen Cahill. Here and Now is up next, right after the NPR newscast at the top of the hour. Tom Hall returns to the host chair tomorrow. I'm Midday senior producer Rob Sivek. Thanks for joining me. Have a great day.